96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. New buildings, new homes, new stores, and new people. That's one way to describe D.C.'s gentrification. Depending on who you are, where you live, and how long you've been here, that can determine what you think about it. Well, tonight we are talking about it, gentrification and its impact on the D.C. Metro. My guests are Heather Raspberry, Executive Director of HAND, the Housing Association of Nonprofit Developers, David Bowers, Vice President and Mid-Atlantic Leader of the Enterprise Community Partners, and Dr. Derek Hira, Director of the Metropolitan Policy Center at American University and author of Race, Class, and Politics in the Cappuccino City. The lines are open. If you have a call, if you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. Certainly, you can follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR or DailyDrumWHUR. Thank you all for coming in. I appreciate it.
Good to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Thanks.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Let me start with you, Dr. Hira. How would you define gentrification?
Well, I think that there's a lot of different definitions of gentrification, but the one that I go by is where there's a low-income community that has an influx of upper-income people that come in. So it's really based on class. But in the U.S., typically what that means is a low-income minority community where whites are moving in. So you do often have a racial connotation that comes along with gentrification. Now, a lot of people are typically concerned with displacement. When you have upper-income people coming in, often that can lead to rising property values that displaces the low-income community. But there are other things to be concerned with gentrification. It's not just residential displacement. There can also be a cultural displacement and a political displacement among the people that might be able to stay in a community with subsidized housing. So all of those things, I think, are in the mix and need to be considered when we talk about gentrification.
Heather, is gentrification good or bad? And how do you see it?
You know, I don't know that it's certainly representing HAND, the Housing Association of Nonprofit Developers, as a or a membership association of various groups, developers, banks, your service providers, all of the different groups that come together to create affordable housing and community development here in this area. And so we certainly see it as one of nuance. We know that there's benefits and challenges to gentrification. Certainly, even as a homeowner in Eckington, I'm benefiting in a rapidly gentrifying neighborhood that's now having new restaurants, new businesses, and amenities that are coming to that neighborhood. But I think what's critical is equity when we're talking about this development and making sure that there's not displacement of low-income residents. And so our members are being very strategic and intentional in ensuring that, you know, we're doing affordable housing development in these communities and helping to minimize some of those negative.
But one could argue that there has been minimal action on that front. As a native, mm-hmm. And as Dr. Hira's book suggests, this was considered the chocolate city, predominantly African-American city. Now he says it's, you know, cappuccino. Some would argue cafe au lait. Some would say, you know, light evaporated sweetened milk, whatever you want to call it. You know, it has certainly changed. And so I don't know so much about the ensuring of that. Certainly there may be a desire on the part of your organization and others like you.
Right.
David, good or bad gentrification? What do you think?
Yeah, so I think the key here is when change in and of itself is a neutral thing, right? It is a matter of what type of change and whether or not, when we talk in the context of gentrification, if residents and businesses and folks who are currently in a place want to maintain their presence and are unable to because of the market pressures or because of the intentionality of displacement, that is a bad thing. If you talk to some folks, you can talk to a poor black person, and we've heard this from some of our partners or groups that represent folks in parts of the city, and they want amenities. They want change. They want new and improved resources in their community. However, if they look up and all of a sudden they can't take advantage of those resources, then it's a bad thing. So when folks say we haven't had, there are only a couple of grocery stores, you've seen these articles east of the Anacostia River. There are two within 4 blocks of 8th Street Northeast. So if you put new grocery stores in certain neighborhoods of Ward 7-8, that's a good thing. But if the market prices start to go up to a point where the average person over there who may be making $30,000 a year all of a sudden can't afford to live there or can't afford the groceries in that grocery store, then that's a bad thing. So there's got to be an intentionality. And I think we all have to be really clear about history. I was doing some research recently for a presentation to City Year D.C. In 1950, this city was only 35% black. The city became majority black in the 60s and 70s as you saw white flight and black migration to the city. So it wasn't always Chocolate City. There was a point where it was cappuccino or ole, but it was more white than black. Then it became predominantly black. Now it's changing, about 48% black. So change can be constant. The question is one, I think Heather hit it, intentionality and us having a conversation about who we want to be as a city when it comes to ethnic background, economic background, cultural background.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about gentrification in the D.C. metro. Who are the winners? Who are the losers? Who is benefiting? Who is not? Let me go to Amanda. Amanda calling from Northeast D.C. Thanks for calling, Amanda. What's on your mind?
How are you?
I'm doing just fine.
I work in the social services field, so I work a lot with people that are displaced in the city. And it's since I came here, 5 years ago, I've seen a rapid increase in rent.
Let me stop you, Amanda, before you continue. You came here 5 years ago from where?
From New York.
Okay, go right ahead.
And even in the neighborhood in which I came into in Northeast, it has changed drastically. The rent has increased by like $600-$700. And I'm a district employee. I'm a government employee. And I find it hard to afford rent. And the only places that I can afford rent are not in the best neighborhoods. But what I'm noticing also in those neighborhoods are because people want to keep that D.C. zip code, these slumlords are charging $1,800-$1,900 for these substandard apartments. So the people who get the short end of the stick are people of color, in particular black people, black single moms. Mm. And it's scary because the entire city, the dynamic is shifting. City council is going to change. If you look at a lot of the jobs in which we are the majority in the district, I believe that's going to change because the consumer is going to change.
Okay.
You're not just looking at housing. You're looking at an entire shift of a culture.
Well, Amanda, thank you so much. You make an excellent point. Dr. Hira, who is responsible for the change in Washington over the past 10 years or so?
I definitely want to get to that. And there's several factors that relate to the redevelopment wave that we're seeing across the city. But I just want to say to Amanda that I'm originally from New York, too. And I'm sure when you came from New York, you thought you were coming to a place that would be a little bit cheaper in D.C. But the rents have risen drastically in the last 10 years. And I mean, Washington, D.C., in terms of rental prices, is getting close to what New York City is. So I feel you on that front. But, you know, in terms of what has happened in this city, I mean, it is a post-industrial powerhouse. I mean, we have an advanced service sector economy, which is still dominated by the federal government. Now, it's not civil servant jobs per se, but it's the outsourced jobs that the federal government is spending. So after September 11th, there was tons of federal government contract jobs that went to the defense industry, which have a big footprint in the D.C. region, and they started creating jobs. But then we had the Great Recession. The Great Recession hits, and there aren't as many jobs, or there's no jobs being produced in New York, in Chicago, in LA. But where are the jobs being produced? In Washington, D.C. And it's because trillions of dollars was being outlaid from the federal government, which disproportionately went to companies that were inside the Beltway that were producing jobs, and young white millennials that were going to schools in these cities flocked to Washington, D.C. And between 2000 and 2010, over 50,000 people came to Washington, mainly white, educated professionals, to take these jobs in these corporations. And they are the ones that are driving the demand that you see with the housing prices. So you have to see the federal government outlay during the Great Recession. And also, but we got to look at the D.C. city government. I mean, if you look at the 90s, a lot of money was spent to redevelop East Downtown. That's where, you know, the MCI, now the Verizon Center, Chinatown redeveloped. And the young white millennials that are coming back to the city, they want to live as close to the central business district as they possibly can. But they can't all afford it. So they're going to the neighborhoods just outside of the central business district, which many of those neighborhoods were low income and were black majority.
And I want to ask the entire table this, and, you know, Dr. Hiring, you can respond to this, David, and also you, Heather, when you talk about the changing demographic, am I painting black folks with too broad a brush to say that a lot of the educated, economically well-heeled black folks don't want to live in the city?
Yeah.
Do they choose to live in the suburbs as opposed to when you have the same age of young white families with, you know, with children, they have become city dwellers.
Right.
Is this preference?
So, Harold, I think you hit on a key point. So here, this is the real talk part of this conversation in terms of, as a person who was born and raised here in this city, there were a number of educated, well-to-do financially black folks who, when this city was called the murder capital of the country, they decided, and it is their right to do that, they wanted to go to Prince George's County. They wanted the gated communities that Wayne Curry talked about, rest in peace, former county executive. They wanted that. So instead of being a pioneer who said, like some young whites did, in communities that were rough here in the city, and they said, we're going to plant roots, we're going to grow here, we're going to make it better. Some folks decide, I want the American dream. I want more yard. I want it cheaper. I want what they thought would be better schools, better public safety. And they moved out to the county. So a lot of well-to-do blacks moved out to the burbs, right? Lower income blacks were left behind. So when we talk about housing and we talk about culture and the loss of political power, it has been on the watch of black mayors in this city that we as a city have not done enough from the government side to make enough investment in home ownership and rental programs, right? While we are one of the leading cities in the nation, our investment in housing, Housing Reduction Trust Fund, we still are far behind what's needed to make sure that those low-income renters and low-moderate-income buyers, right, can take a piece of this city. We ought to be land banking. We should have been putting houses and land trust and land banks on the ownership side, making bigger investments in long-term affordability on the rental side. From a housing standpoint, we did not do that. And I'll use one other quick example.
Real quick, because I want Heather to respond to that as well.
Go-go music is a key thing. Go-go music is an indigenous music of young black African Americans. It was on the watch of black mayors that music was not cultivated, not embraced. There were radio stations in this city did not play go-go music. There were black mayors and city council members who wanted to shut down any and every club that hosted go-go's. There was no embrace of that as let's nurture that as an indigenous music, use that for entrepreneurs and business. So we have to keep it real in terms of it's not just white folks who came in and tried to push black folks out. It has also been on the watch of black leadership, government and non-government, that we have not done enough to make the investments in and the embracing of black culture in this city.
Heather, your thoughts about it.
So as someone, I'm not a native of D.C., but I've been here now for 14 years. And when I moved here, it definitely was Chocolate City. I was turned on by the fact there was young African-American professionals in this community that were working. I wanted to live in the city. I stayed in Laurel, Maryland for, I guess, maybe 6-9 months before I could get on my feet, and I had my first apartment here in Washington, D.C. I think I'm part of a generation that they moved here wants to be in the city. They want to have access to the social scene, the businesses, and frankly, coming from Indiana, I don't like to commute. So I wanted to be close to my job. I've always worked in D.C., and frankly, working in affordable housing and community development, that's been my career for 14 years. And so I understood the benefits of staying in the city.
But with that said, and as Dr. Hira suggested, affordable housing is arguably the biggest problem in Washington, D.C. Just this week, Manhattan capped D.C. As the most expensive city in America to live in. But D.C. Was number two. I believe. So, you know, affordable housing, I don't live here, and I'm a native. I live in Baltimore. I commute because I can't afford to move here.
Right.
and I got a real good job.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, you know, I guess, you know, my question is, and I want to answer this on the other side, is, you know, is gentrification good or bad? And what happens to the people who are moved out? If you're on the line, stay with us. That includes Ray calling from D.C. We're talking about gentrification. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Lines are open. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of your phone calls right after the break. Stay with us.